Welcome to the Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 200 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Jeffrey.
Hello everyone, I'm Jeffrey, a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
For those of you who might be listening to this on the internet, whenever it is, it's a Saturday night, it's the day before Valentine's Day, we're in Los Angeles, it was like 75 degrees today, sunny, beautiful, and we're all here and we get to participate in each other's recovery, so we're pretty lucky actually, and I'm grateful to be here, so thank you all very much. And thank you very much for asking me to step up and fill in. I came to OA in September of 2006, and I weighed about 291 pounds, and I got abstinent on November 19th, and I've been abstinent since then, so a little over 3 years, and I weigh about 185 pounds now, so I've been 100 and some pounds, and that's where I am, and here I am a little over three years later, and still maintaining. It's pretty amazing. I brought some pictures that I'll pass around, and wow, it's always quite a thing to see those pictures, I'll tell you. Okay, so what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like for me. I had a really good childhood. Crazy things happen, but I had a really nice childhood. I had two parents, a brother and a sister, and it was an incredibly loving place to grow up. We were encouraged, we were supported, and we were loved. As I always think back on that time, I had really nothing but happy memories. And it's not that I blocked anything out. I've spoken to my brother and my sister about this. We have happy memories growing up. And yet, regardless, I was a fat kid growing up, and my brother, to this day, he's a compulsive overeater, and he's big. My whole family, my entire family, we're all addicts of some sort. I did have a couple crazy things that happened growing up. My parents got separated when I was 7 years old, and my father moved to Atlantic City. I spent a lot of time with my dad in Atlantic City on the weekends, and I had a ball. He lived at a motel called the Strand Motel, which later was bought by the Golden Nugget, but that was like my home away from home, and I knew all these people. And the way that it worked, and I just love this, I'm thinking about it, my dad passed away 5 years ago, but used to go there on the weekends, and then we would get ready for dinner. He would get ready, he would take a shower, and I would go to the bar of this motel. And it was a really hopping place, it really was. And here I was, at 8 years old, sitting at a bar, ordering drinks for people, at 8 years old. And I felt comfortable doing it. That was how I was exposed. I was exposed to those kinds of people. I felt comfortable around those kinds of people, and I loved it. And I love that time of my life. Is it right that an 8-year-old is ordering booze for a bunch of people that his dad didn't have money for? Probably not. But that's my story. That's my story, and it brings back really great memories. So that was when I was like 7 or 8, and I can remember up until that point, I was always thin up until that point. And my parents got separated, and I can remember what I ate every day when I was with my dad. Grilled cheese, French fries, and a Coke. That's what I had every day. And I remember the pictures of me when I was 9 years old. So 1979. And I was chubby. I was a chubby kid. And, I was a chubby kid. And I will cut ahead a couple years, and I've shared this before. A lot of you know my story, but it's an important part of my story. It's a little uncomfortable, actually. But one of the other things that my father did for me when I was 14 years old, when we spent a lot of summers in Florida, when I was 14, my birthday present was a hooker by the name of Mandy. And it was, at 14 years old, it was an amazing, amazing experience. But I don't think that it served me in the long run. I really don't. And I can remember, because there's pictures that I'm passing around at 14 when I was a normal weight. I mean, I was just a normal weight, although I always had a very skewed vision of myself, but I was a normal weight. So I had this hooker at 14 years old, and great experience. But what happened after that was I started gaining weight again. And something that happened also when I was a little bit younger, and it also continued through my adult years, was I had an inappropriate relationship with my best friend's mother. And to make things worse, that woman eventually became my stepmother. And so from a very young age, things were a little screwy for me. You know, they were a little screwy for me. And I just ate, you know. I just ate. That's what I did. And on the outside, things were always great. I always felt like whatever my dad had was mine. He was extremely successful, wealthy, took his company to the New York Stock Exchange, and I felt I was riding on his coattails, and that was going to be me, and whatever he had was mine, and it was great. But I just kept eating and eating and eating. And all through college, it was, you know, I remember I went to a school for theater, and I really was the fattest one in my group. But it was great because I got to play all the character parts, but I was heavy, and I just always eat it, and that's what I did all through college, from the time classes were done on Friday till I had to come back to class on Monday. I went to my dorm room and I ate, and I only came out to go eat. That's all that I did. And I missed out on a lot of stuff. I missed out on so much stuff. I basically, I would say, yeah, there was about 10 years there that I lost, and it was from this disease of compulsive overeating. It was 10 years, and I'll never get it back. I'll never get it back, and that's okay. That's my story. Thinking about that time when I graduated college, and didn't know how to take care of myself. I was living off of Dad's money. Dad was paying my rent. Dad was paying my bills. Never had to. The experience of having the hooker at 14 years old was really skewed my thinking about what it is, what a relationship is. And I never wanted. I wanted so badly to be with someone, but I found it so difficult to connect. And I always felt very. I felt different from other people. I felt better than other people. I was special, and I was better than you. That's how I felt. And the pounds just kept coming and coming and coming, and I just couldn't stop eating. And eventually, I don't know how it is for all of you, but you get to a point of just complete and utter hopelessness, and you can't get out of it. I mean, I suppose the other feeling would be like, if you're so in debt, how the hell do you get out of debt? If you owe so much, how can just paying a little bit here and a little, how are you ever going to get out of it? And so I went on diets before. I went on a lot of diets, and I lost weight, and I always gained the weight back. And I guess I can, I'll jump around a little bit, but I was living out in Los Angeles, and I just have to say this. When I turned 30 in New York City, it was one of the worst days of my life, and it wasn't so much because I was turning 30. It was because my 20s were gone, and I did nothing. 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 When I lived in L.A., I basically was at the beach from Thursday to Sunday. That's what I did. I was making enough money doing what I was doing, but I wasted 10 years of my life. And when I turned 30, I was absolutely miserable. I was fat, I was alone, and I was celebrating with my family, and it just didn't feel good. Nothing felt good. And I actually moved out to L.A. I'm going to cut off a little bit here. I moved out to L.A., back to L.A., and I think it was 2002, and I felt really good. I had dieted down to about 213 pounds from about 250 or 60, I don't know. And I had a friend who was in AA, And he went to the meetings in the valley. And when I moved out here, he said, and the meetings in the valley, when he went in right before him, he thought it was an OA meeting because the people that were going in, he saw them going in fat, and over the months, a lot of them were coming out thin. So then he found out that it was OA. And when I got out here, he said, why don't you check out an OA meeting? And I just said, what's OA? I never heard of OA. And he said, it's Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm like, yeah, I'll check it out. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm 200. I was looking good. I said, yeah, I'll check it out. I'll go. So I went, and I hated it. Man, did I hate it. And I hated everybody in the rooms. I really, really believed that everybody in the rooms were losers. And I remember there was a woman who had a license plate, and I can still remember it, and the license plate was PWRLSS, for powerless. And I thought it was disgusting. I did. I used that word, but I thought it was disgusting. I couldn't believe that somebody would advertise that they're powerless. Because that's not how I grew up. I grew up with a very successful father. If you want something, you work for it, you get it. You can get it, you can do it, you can do this. And you can probably do it on your own. You don't need other people. That's how I grew up. So I went to the meeting, and I hated it, but I stayed for 30 days. And I got a chip for 30 days for not eating sugar, and then I left. And that was it. And so that was 213 pounds. And then the weight, of course, it's going to come back on, because it always came back on. So it comes back on, it comes back on, it comes back on. My father passed away, and I went back for the funeral. And I remember all the food. And I remember saying to myself, okay, if you can get through sitting Shiva and not eat any chocolate and not eat any nuts, you'll be okay. And I did. I white-knuckled it. I didn't have any chocolate. I didn't have any nuts. And I came back to L.A. and I started gaining weight. And I couldn't stop eating. And I've shared before the volume of the food that I eat. And it was massive. My binges would start on a Saturday at 5:30 in the morning, and they didn't stop until I was home on my couch in front of my TV, naked, because my clothes wouldn't fit, laying there like I couldn't move. I just couldn't move. And they were about 25,000-30,000 calorie binges. And to not be able to stop, So what happened? I was becoming sick. I was taking two blood pressure medications to control my blood pressure. I had become type 2 diabetic, and I was taking glucophage to control that, 1,000 milligrams a day. I was taking cholesterol medication because my cholesterol was through the roof. And I was working a job, and I was miserable at the job because it was a corporate job, and I didn't really like it. But I came into work on a Monday, and I came in and I was met by HR and a couple security guards, and I was fired. And that's how they fire you at this company. And I was happy. I was giddy because I wanted to leave, but I didn't know how to leave. But I was also at my heaviest at 291 pounds, and I was done. I was done. I hit it, and I was done. I remember I called my friend in AA. And I said to him, I remember these words, it was amazing. I said to him, I said, here's the deal. I said, I know that I will never, ever, ever be able to lose weight. I know that. I know that about myself. But I'm going to go back to OA because I've got no place else to go. And I walked into OA, and as I've said before, those same people that irritated me a couple years earlier were making a whole lot of sense now. And I liked them. I liked what they had to say. And immediately, I found myself driving to the Darby office to buy literature. And I can remember the first time that I really sat down and started reading some of the literature, and I was excited because I felt, that's my story. I felt like somebody interviewed me and wrote down what I had said. And I loved that. And I was beginning to feel like a part of something. I got a sponsor. My first sponsor was Scott. He passed away a couple years ago. He was my first sponsor, and we started working the steps. And I was still binging. I was still binging while I was working the steps. And I've said this story before, but I got to say it again because it's how I got abstinent. So I was binging while I was working the steps, and I was a couple months into it, and I was invited to this food tasting party. And I, there was someone in program who I really liked a lot, a woman who really had what I wanted, not just program wise, but she. and I basically I asked her on a date basically, and I said, "Do you want to come with me to this food tasting party?" And she said, "Sure, I'll come with you." And I was like, "Great." And I said, "You know, it's a food tasting, so we'll go, we'll make the rounds, we'll have a nice dinner." She said, "Well, I will have eaten my dinner by then, but if you want to eat, feel free to eat." And I did. I thought she was a little crazy. I said, "You know, it's a food tasting party, but okay." So I picked her up, and we went to this food tasting party. And I had every intention in the world to just eat, not binge or anything, but just eat there. And an amazing thing happened. We stood in the middle of the room while this event was taking place, and we just talked program. And the obsession was lifted. And I was literally struck abstinent that night. And so I don't have the experience of sitting with feelings while I put the food down. That's not my experience. I didn't have to go through that because I was binging while I was working the steps. And then all of a sudden, it stopped. It stopped. And I said to myself, what happened? Because usually it's, I'll just start tomorrow morning. I'll just start tomorrow. I don't need to do this now. I'm at a food tasting party. This is great. But something happened, and I'm reminded when I think of that day, how important it was that I wound up getting abstinent with someone else in the program. I couldn't do it alone. And there really began the idea of being not dependent, but relying on other people and really becoming a part of in this program. So I got abstinent, and it's important to know that my meals were gigantic meals that I was eating. I mean, I was still having breakfast burrito for breakfast, and I don't know how many calories it had, and my salad for lunch was packed high, and I'm not kidding, I probably had at least 1,000 calories worth of dressing on it. I mean, it would just be covered in dressing, but they were meals. And I wasn't binging anymore, and I wasn't eating at night, and I didn't have the desire to do that anymore. And I was emailing my food to people, and they were not telling me, nobody told me what to eat or what to do. They said, "Email me your food and just do what you're doing. Just keep doing what you're doing." And I remember there was one point where they came up to me and they said, "You have to start eating more food." And I didn't understand that. I said, "I don't understand. What do you mean? I don't understand. How do you lose weight if you eat more food?" They said, "Eat more food." And the thing is that, and I've said this before, when I came into OA, I was done. I was spent. I knew instinctively that my way of doing things didn't work. So when I got a sponsor, when they told me to do something, I did it. I didn't ask questions. Nobody ever said, "Put down the food." But when they told me to do something, how do I know better? If I knew better, I wouldn't be in the 12-step program. I'm sick. I didn't know that I was spiritually sick. But I was sick. My head didn't work. It did not work. And it's crazy to think that I turned to food. I mean, it's just crazy that I did that. Cigarettes, alcohol, no. It was the food for me. But I did what my sponsors asked me to do, and I never questioned them. Because God knows my way of doing things was really destructive, and how could your way of doing things be any worse? So I'll try it. And really amazing things happened when I did that. When I fired myself as the quarterback and the director of my own life, that's when everything started happening. And let me tell you something. I'm 3 years into this. I still take it back. I still take it back all the time. And I pay for it. I pay for it. And that's why I meet with my sponsor. And that's why I work the steps. That's why I have fellowship with other people in this program who still have what I want. I still seek out those people who have what I want. So I started working the steps. And, you know, I'll talk a little bit about higher power. I've always had a relationship with higher power. I'm Jewish. I've always believed in God, and I always felt that my God was a personal God to me. I never liked feeling that I was a Jewish person among other Jewish people praying to God. I felt like it was me and God. But my way of talking to him was, it was always a negotiation. You know, just get me this, and I'll not, and I won't do that, or I need this, or I want this. And so I came into program, and I still have the same higher power. It's the same higher power I've always had, but the relationship has changed a little bit. And when I started working these steps of Overeaters Anonymous, these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, these 12 steps, it changed my life. Unbelievable things happened in my life. And I remember when I was working step one, I didn't know what step two said. When I was working step two, I didn't know what step three said. And when I was on three and everybody said step four, I didn't know what it was. And when I got to it, I did it. And then I did step five, to read everything. And my second sponsor was a woman, and I was reading her this sex stuff to my sponsor at her house. Beautiful, beautiful setting. She's so loving. I love her. And I can remember reading some really, really dark things. And these weren't things that I suppressed. I talked about these things to other people. But to then have it on paper and really, in the same spot, admit my faults to God, to another human being, to myself. And I remember having the paper like this, and I was reading, and I can remember as I was reading it, I sort of, you know, looked over while I was reading it, and she had her eyes closed. And at the end, and what really got me at the end of reading that four step to her was, what got me so emotional was not everything that I revealed to her. The last few questions that I answered were, "How's your life today?" And that's when I started, when I was reading what I had written about how my life is today, I started bawling. And I because you're reading this thing and you're like, "My God, this guy is sick. He is spiritually sick. How's life today?" Life was so much better. And I even said to her, I said, "What do you think about that one part in there when I mentioned that thing about that thing?" And she said, "Jeff," she said, "look at the lengths you went just to feel. Look at what you had to do just to feel." Yeah, you know? And as my sponsor Scott used to say, when I got down on myself or when something happened, he would say, "Jeff, today's been a good day. If you owe an amends, you'll do it in your fourth step. You'll write about it in your eighth step. You'll make it in your ninth step. In the meantime, get on with the business of living." Good advice. I like that. Get on with the business of living. And I led this meeting, I guess almost 2 years ago. And when I led the meeting, one of the things that I said I really wanted, and I've always wanted this in my life, I wanted the experience to know what it would be like to be with a woman and love that woman and have that woman love me, and to wake up in the morning, have her there, run my fingers through her hair, and feel good. Wow, wouldn't you know, July 18th, I'm getting married. And, yeah. I never thought that. I thought it, but I didn't think that it would be possible for me. And I think that that is part of what they say when beyond your wildest dreams. And literally, beyond your wildest dreams means things that you cannot think about yet, that you don't know. And I will tell you that this program gives me great hope. I love the people in this program. I feel lucky to be in this program. And I feel... 10 minutes? Thank you. I feel incredibly lucky to be in this program, and I know that my Father is up in heaven. I believe in that. I know that He's up there, and I know that He's looking down, and He is laughing His ass off, because He's getting to see me in a way that He never could be. And I believe that when you die, all of the questions that you have are answered. And life just sort of makes sense. And I feel like we get a little bit of a piece of that here. I feel like we get a piece of serenity and peace. And things make sense. I'm lucky. I'm a lucky guy. I think everybody in here is lucky. I don't care what you're going through. I think we're all lucky. And I said this before. I don't have all the money in the bank that I thought I'd have. I'm not driving the car that I thought I'd drive. I'm certainly marrying the woman that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't have a lot of the things in my life that I thought I would have. But I have everything that I need, and I'm taken care of. And I truly believe, and this isn't all the time, guys. This is sometimes things get crazy, you know. But I truly believe that I will be taken care of. And I believe that I need to keep coming to meetings, because the minute I skip a couple meetings, Jeff can do it. I can do it. I know I can do it. And I can't do it. I can't do it because my food gets bigger. And it's fucking crazy. It's crazy. Going out to eat. I mean, I can do it. I can do it. Can't do it. And that's why I keep coming back. And that's why I love this program. And I will say, welcome to the newcomer. You're in the right place. You are in the right place. And I hope you stay. I hope you stay for the miracle. I'm a living miracle. Let me tell you. I am a living miracle. And I don't say that with ego. I say it because it's true. It's true. And there are many people in this room who are miracles. And I feel great. And I feel great. And I'm really happy to be here. And I want to take some questions in the couple minutes that we have left. So thank you for letting me share. Michael has a question.
The question I've got for you, when you were sending your photographs around, I looked at them, and the first thing that came into my alcoholic head was, I used to look like that. And the second thing that came into my head was, God, I could go back to being like that. And I suffer a lot from fear of going back to the way my life was. Do you?
Absolutely.
And how do you deal with that?
I'll tell you, how do I deal with the fear of you're thinking that I can go back to that weight? When I first started losing the weight, I remember saying to my sponsor, Scott, I was feeling really good, and I said something about me. And he pulled me aside, and he said, Jeff, he said, if you think this is anything other than higher power doing for you what you can't do for yourself, we're going to have a very tough time working together. And I used to think, no way, no way can I go back to 291 pounds. And I'm here to tell you, yes way. Absolutely. When I went to Spain with my fiance in October, and let me tell you, Spain, good tapas and really good drinks. And I came back and I gained a little bit of weight. And that little bit of weight gain, you asked me to speak a few months ago, and I said, I can't do it. I don't have the experience. I have the experience. I don't have the strength and hope to share. I don't have it. And it was hard for me to say no back then. But you get this little bit of a weight gain, and it plants the seed. That seed in your head, and that turns to this obsession of the mind, and it's so hard to get out of. And for me, it starts with the food on my plate. And when I'm home and I'm making a steak, that steak is amazing and delicious and lovely. And if I don't cut off 6 or 8 ounces, I'm eating the whole fucking thing. And that's what I have to do. And it starts with the food on my plate. And it's a serious thing for me. It is a serious piece of business for me, this food. And for me, it starts with the food. It has to. And guess what? I don't always do it. I take my will back all the time. I'm a person. I'm imperfect. But, yeah. Thanks.
Hi, Susan Cosmo. Thank you so much. So, at those times that you don't cut off the 4 to 6 ounces and you eat the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
What do you say to yourself after that meal is over?
What do I say to myself when the meal is over, when I don't cut off those 4 or 6 ounces and I eat the whole steak? That's a good question. Sometimes I let it slide. And I report my food every day to my sponsor. I let him know what I eat. But sometimes when I write down barbecue and he writes back, what exactly is barbecue? I had barbecue for dinner. Or I had enough freaking barbecue to feed 4 people. What do I think? I usually think about it the next morning because it's an overindulgence. I used to ask my sponsor, how do you know the difference between when you eat too much and when you compulsively overeat? And he said, for me, compulsive overeating is eating to fill a void that no food can fill. Well, you know, that sounds good, but sometimes I just eat too much. I mean, why did I do it? I'm a compulsive overeater. And yeah, I know that there's something beyond it. There's deeper feelings, and I need to sit with certain things. I'm a low-bottom compulsive overeater. I mean, the quantity of food that I can eat is tremendous. What do I say? Sometimes I let it slide. it comes back to me. It comes back to me when I have to weigh in the next week and I'm not where I want to be. But as my sponsor says to me, medically, I'm out of the woods. I used to be morbidly obese. I'm not there anymore. Medically, you're out of the woods. Gain 2 pounds, lose 3, gain 5. I haven't done that. Gain a few pounds, lose a little bit. You're out of the woods medically. Let's deal with this on a daily basis. That's what I have to do every day. Every day is a new day. One day at a time program. That's it. My God, do I know that. One day at a time.
What is your abstinence
and food plan? Okay. What's my abstinence and food plan? Do I have a... How much time do I have left? Couple minutes? My first sponsor described abstinence to me this way. He said, abstinence is a spiritual condition. It's about the kind of man that I want to become and the kind of man that higher power has always had in store for me. And your food plan is simply another tool that gets you there. In terms of what is my abstinence, it's 3 meals a day and up to 2 snacks, and I don't eat after dinner. I don't eat fast food. I don't eat sugar in terms of cakes and candies and pies. Trust me, I get plenty of sugar in ketchup. I get plenty of sugar in my fruit, and I get plenty of sugar when I have a Mai Tai. It's all sweet. I know that it is. I don't go near the donuts and the things like that that were real big, big binge foods for me. And my food plan is it's eating sober. It's eating 3 meals a day, and that's a meal. And I also count calories. I keep it between 1,800 and 2,000 calories. And when I go over 2,000 calories, the weight goes up. And I've been told by my sponsor and other people in program that as I continue in this program, I will probably need less food. And I don't like that. But I will tell you one thing, something that this program has done for me. The variety of food that I eat is so much greater and tastier and better for me than the shit that I used to shovel in my mouth. I can still, when I walk by a McDonald's and I smell that fat and that grease, I salivate. It takes me to that place, and I want it. I want it. I don't eat that stuff. I can have a hamburger. I just want to say this. I can eat a cheeseburger at Father's office that has 10 times the amount of calories in it that the cheeseburger at McDonald's has, but I can't eat the McDonald's cheeseburger because that's where I used to binge. So 3 meals a day, up to 2 snacks, no eating after dinner, and I try to eat sober with my food and not gorge myself, not stuff myself, and stick between 1,800 and 2,000 calories. That's all the time that I have. Thank you very much for